The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program in just a moment. We'll be looking at the hysterical anti-Trump reaction sweeping across the United States that made quite a lot of news last night there in the States and even around the world. We also have lots of emails, a lot more emails to get to later on in the program. Appreciate those comments that keep coming in. If you'd like to join the crowd, email the show at td@kpcg.fm. Don't wait until I give you the mandatory Friday assignment. Go ahead and email today. Email right after today's program and let us know if you happen to be listening to the live broadcast. Well, first, we'll get to these campus protests across the U.S. As I said, this is from the New York Times today. On campuses nationwide, students marched against Mr. Trump with signs bearing slogans like, "Not my president." And protesters in Oakland, California smashed windows and set fire to garbage bins. On Wednesday night, thousands of people protested in several cities, including Chicago, Philadelphia, Seattle, and New York, where demonstrators converged in Midtown Manhattan, right in front of Trump Tower, the home of the president-elect. Those are just some of the clips that we found without all the profanity. But from across the states, it's bringing out a lot of protests on campuses, in particular young people, very upset about what happened late Tuesday night. Not my president. He's not my president. There's a story also coming out of California about this campaign that's gaining some momentum for the state of California to leave the United States, to exit, or Cal-exit, as they're calling it. It made it into the Telegraph over here. It says, as the firmly Democrat voting state of California comes to terms with Donald Trump's election victory, a group of campaigners are gaining traction in their fight to have the state secede from the nation. Anger, it says, and disappointment among those who voted for Clinton. 61.5% of Californians voted for her. The state that gave America Ronald Reagan just, 35 years ago? 61.5%, it says it has seen a marked increase in attention for the Yes California campaign, with supporters making Cal exit a trending topic on social media. And then the Telegraph says here, generally characterized as a fringe campaign, it nevertheless has some high-profile backers. So it's gaining more support. And it's not so much on the fringe as it once was. Lots and lots of division. Of course, this is a point that we typically stress after every election, because it's generally right down the middle, where you have one side, when the other side wins, reacting hysterically, saying it's the end of our nation as we know it. We've got to take dramatic action, or we've got to leave, or move, or go to Canada, as I said yesterday, or secede. It was that way 8 years ago, and it's that way this time around. But this time around, there is an especially strong movement of anger and hatred. We know what the Bible says about division. Jesus said, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. Every city, he said, or house divided against itself cannot stand. It's not going to stand unless there's unity. Thayer's lexicon, by the way, on that verse, referring to desolation, it means to lay waste, to ruin, or to reduce to nothing. Every kingdom divided is brought to desolation. Desolation. That's where this is leading. And you see signs of that division everywhere in the United States, whether it's race or social or class distinction, whatever it is. Politics. Yesterday we talked about how this political campaign really did expose just an unbelievable bias in the major media. And of course, the results of the election the other night, it certainly exposed how wrong the media got it. And yet, coming off of that, don't expect any contrition or humility on the part of members in the media. Don't expect it. Don't expect for them. Those who are so biased and who got so much wrong, don't expect any of them to now come forward and say, you know what, we got it wrong. And you know what, we did hurt our credibility given the coverage that was so heavily supportive of Hillary Clinton. One of our astute listeners sent me this comment just a few hours ago. He said, the war on public morale that the media engaged in, using its own wishful projections of Republican losses, only served to deceive themselves, more so than to discourage the American people from voting. And now it is the media who are most discouraged of all. They're most discouraged. As I said yesterday, you can see it on their faces. Downcast, discouraged, depressed. And he says here, may we expect the media to now pass on that discouragement to the public and all groups which are prone to protesting? In other words, don't expect the media to take this lying down. Don't expect them to react with any kind of contrition or humility. You can expect them to be out there encouraging an uprising, encouraging division, encouraging strife. The New York Times said today, one of its headlines on the front page, Trump rides a wave of fury that may damage global prosperity. I mean, he may well bring down the entire world economy, Donald Trump. A wave of fury that took him right into the White House. Another headline, same paper, Donald Trump's victory is met with shock across a wide political divide. People are just shocked. They're beside themselves. The American political establishment, it says, reeled on Wednesday as leaders in both parties began coming to grips with 4 years of President Donald J. Trump in the White House. A once unimaginable scenario that has now plunged the United States and its allies and adversaries into a period of deep uncertainty. I mean, it would have been so perfect. No uncertainty, nothing. Everything would have just been fine and dandy had Hillary Clinton just gotten a few thousand more votes in Florida and Pennsylvania. But now, deep uncertainty about the policies, the impact of his administration. I mean, to some extent, that's true. There is a lot of uncertainty. And Joel Hilliker brought that out in his piece that was posted at the Trumpet just today. I mean, you can expect surprises. That there are no solutions. No, there are no man-made solutions to the problems America's facing. But to see the reaction in the major media, and then to see them out there, in particular, using once again the race card to stir up hatred and animosity. What did my father say? I read it to you yesterday. Many people believe that Mr. Obama is going to greatly improve race relations, but our racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. That's what he said 8 years ago when he talked about how the race card was going to be played so often for political gain. And it was. Who can deny this? And it is. It is again. Right now. At the Federalist. This article here, I failed to jot down the author. But he said, so even as, this is talking about the past 8 years. He says, so even as President Obama was elected on an illusory image as someone who could unite the country and put racial politics behind us, the Democrats' whole electoral strategy was based on appealing to racial politics. Obama's two election victories depended in large part on increased turnout by minority voters who voted in unusually high percentages to elect and re-elect the first black president. Well, and we could add to that, there were also tens of millions of white people who voted for Barack Obama, but he did get the minority voters to turn out, something that Hillary Clinton struggled with the other night. It says this electoral strategy fit well with the inclinations of a politician who had actually been brought up neck deep in racial politics. So we saw President Obama pass up every opportunity to be a calming and uniting figure in racial controversies. From the Beer Summit to Trayvon Martin to Ferguson to Black Lives Matter, while he quietly demurred to the idea that all of his critics must be racist, he didn't exactly go out of his way to discourage his supporters from making that argument. Well, they're just all racist. And you heard his supporters make that argument, and he didn't do much to tamp it down. Well, now yesterday he comes out and says, hey, we've got to come together. But what was he saying about Trump before the election? What was he out there stirring up? As this individual writes at the Federalist, I mean, that race card was played early and often, and it came from the top down. And now with the election of Trump, that argument's just going to get louder and louder and louder. Listen to what this commentator had to say on CNN last night. This is clip two.
Here's the deal, right? So Donald Trump is a bigot. There's no other way to get around it.
Wow.
Anybody who supports, accepts that, supports it. Anybody who supports it is promoting it. And that makes you a part of the bigotry itself. Now, you have to decide whether or not you want to be part of the bigotry that is Donald Trump. You have to decide whether you want to be part of the sexism and misogyny that is Donald Trump. You have to decide whether you want to be part of the bullying that would allow him to make fun of one of my disabled colleagues at the New York Times. You have to decide that. There is no other space for you. There is no place for you to say, I'm going to put that to the side because I believe in conservative principles. I can't put that to the side because I believe that I do not want to vote for Hillary. You have to make a decision because your party has now decided that this is the person. This con man is your front man. Mm. And you have to decide whether or not you're going to follow that.
That's a commentator who happens to write for the New York Times, if you can believe it. That's a New York Times columnist by the name of Charles Blow. He's on there going back and forth with another black man. And as it happens, the host is also black. But there he is saying anyone who supports Donald Trump is part of the bigotry. So that would include all 59 point whatever million. Part of the bigotry, the misogyny. They're part of the racist problem. in the United States. That's someone writing in the New York Times. You should listen to the rest of the exchange there. As the, I don't know who the other black man was, he was a Trump supporter, but he held his composure and tried to get in a little back and forth. But this columnist from the New York Times wouldn't have any of it. Just one insult after another. "I don't even know you," he said. "Who are you? I don't have to answer you. I don't have to respond to you. You're part of the problem. You're a bigot too." That's essentially what he's saying. Well, that's a columnist. And you've got to give a columnist the license to editorialize. Okay, that's later on in the New York Times, I suppose. Look at what's on the front page this morning. I mentioned a little bit from a previous story. Here's another article. Front page, New York Times. "Donald Trump's victory was built on unique coalition of white voters." And then listen to how it sets up the story. "One of the biggest upsets in American political history was built on a coalition of white voters unlike that of any other previous Republican candidate, according to election results and interviews with voters and demographic experts." It says Mr. Trump spoke to their aspirations. These whites, keep in mind. "He spoke to their aspirations and fears more directly than any Republican candidate in decades, attacking illegal immigrants and Muslims and promising early Wednesday to return the forgotten men and women of our country to the symbolic and political forefront of American life. He electrified the country's white majority." This is the front page of the New York Times this morning. Doing everything that it can to stir up division between whites and minorities. It says later, "Magnified by the constitutional design of the Electoral College and aided by Republican-led efforts to dampen black and Latino voting in states like North Carolina, Mr. Trump's America proved the larger on Election Day." It wasn't just that he had a message, you see, that appealed to white racists. Well, the Republican machine, don't you know, it was out there actually working to suppress the black vote. This is institutional. This kind of racism. How are we going to get rid of this? That's just the front page of the New York Times. Yesterday, I played you that comment from another commentator at CNN, Van Jones, when he was talking about, well, this is obviously some kind of white lash, as he said.
"This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president, in part. And that's the part where the pain comes."
And so that's how this is going to be played from the left. This is what's behind the victory. Whoopi Goldberg was quick to defend Van Jones yesterday on The View. Clip 4.
"You can say that there was no white lash. There was a little bit of white lash. I remember. I was there. You know, I watched what's happened in America over the last 8 years.
Over the last 8 years, that's under the leadership of Barack Obama. She's seen what's happened. She's seen how white people have treated that black administration. And so this obviously then is white lash. I mean, the statistics don't bear this out, I should add. They don't. Donald Trump didn't even get as many votes as Mitt Romney. There were more whites that voted for Romney than Donald Trump. And then on the other side, there were more Latinos, as I said yesterday, more Latinos and blacks that voted for Trump than they did Romney. But never mind the statistics. Now, I'm not saying there weren't white-collar or rather working whites in Pennsylvania that did rise up and who are tired of being called names, racists, bigots, and so on. But this was not some kind of a landslide victory, because all of the racists came out of the woodwork. These statistics were pretty much the same as they were 4 years ago. If anything, fewer voted for Trump. He wasn't as popular as Romney. Now he did do better in certain states, the so-called Rust Belt, where his message did resonate. people in those states, Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, that feel like they have been left behind, that feel like the stagnant economy has really hurt them, has punished them. But right across the board, I mean, the colors were pretty much the same. And if anything, it was Hillary Clinton not getting out as many of the Democratic voters as President Obama was able to do in 2008, 2012. In any event, this is how the story will be spun from the left. It's racism. It's racism. Notice what Van Jones followed up with. This is the you heard what he said on election night, White Lash. Here's what he said again last night. He has a pretty contentious exchange again on CNN.
Muslim parents that are afraid right now aren't afraid because of these kids with these signs. They're afraid because he said over and over again that he wanted to ban people of their faith. That lands like a bomb
from
in the left.
Into the country.
Hold on a second. You want to explain to me why people who are scared shouldn't be afraid, and you want
but for you to say internment camps.
I didn't say internment camps. People are afraid of
but
that.
But you should correct that. You should correct that fear. That's not true. Donald Trump has never proposed internment camps.
You don't need to lecture me on this stage. Hold on a second, Clay. Kayla, you guys won, and you need to back off. You need to have a little bit of empathy and understanding for people who are afraid, because your candidate has been one of the most explosively provocative candidates in the history of our country. And there's a price to be paid for that. Hold on a second.
Let him finish.
I am not finished. I'm not going to be talked over tonight. I'm not. You have people who are terrified. And you have to take some responsibility for it. I am not spreading the terror. I am trying to damp it down. Let me finish my point. Listen. You have people, Latino families, who say, this guy has said he's going to deport millions of people. They don't know, should they sell their homes? They are terrified. That is a real fear. You have Muslims who have heard him say nothing good about the Muslim community the entire campaign.
That's Van Jones last night, back and forth, again, with a couple of Trump supporters, trying to say how terrified minorities are, Latinos, Muslims, and so on. And I should add here, I think I saw this in the Independent just today, where it says that Donald Trump removed, the big statement last December was that, if you remember, he came out and said, under my administration, we're going to put a ban on Muslims coming into the United States. And that's what that commentator tried to point out there to Mr. Jones. But we're going to put a ban on them coming into the United States until we figure out what's going on. I mean, we have to do it for safety's sake because of the terrorism and so on. Until we figure out what's going on. Well, that was part of his website up until the election, and that's now been removed. He's even removed the statement about banning them from coming into the U.S., and he's already walked away some of the stronger statements that he made about the illegal immigration. And yet still, you can be sure that the media is going to be doing everything that they can to tell their viewers, he is going to deport millions of you. You might consider now selling your home. He has nothing good to say about the Muslim community. Nothing. This is a bigot. This is a racist. And he's now going to occupy the Oval Office. And so the protesters are out in full force. As you heard at the top of the program, here's another bit of protesting. Listen to this exchange between a CNN reporter and one of the protesters in, I believe it was Southern California. This is clip 6.
Lily, your sign tonight says...
Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. If we don't fight, who's going to fight for us? People had to die for freedom where we're at today. We can't just do rallies. We have to fight back. There will be casualties on both sides. There will be, because people have to die to make a change in this world. But Trump, enough with your racism. Stop splitting families. Don't split my family.
And you're fearful that you're going to lose friends and relatives to deport?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Friends, family, even all races, not just my Hispanic culture, but the rest of the races.
That's a protester in Southern California saying that there's going to be casualties on both sides and that people are going to have to die. And Trump's a racist. And that's national television, CNN, as then the host presumably cuts away to another commercial. Or the moderator in that previous exchange. After all of those outrageous charges, then presumably saying something along the lines of, well, thank you two for a spirited debate, and we'll carry on to the next story. Where is this leading? Where are we headed with this kind of rhetoric? Fuel is just being poured onto these flames. And we've seen explosions, as you know. We've been covering it on this program for a year and a half. As it explodes from city to city. You've heard a lot about the Trump movement. Well, where is the movement, the anti-Trump movement, leading? What happens when these two clash? Ezekiel 5 has something to say about America's cities. That's what we've got to be concerned about here. We've got to rise above these divisive issues and try to get God's perspective. What does God say about America's future? What does God say about America's leaders' inability to, whether it's President Obama or President Trump? What does God have to say about the leaders' inability to solve the problems of this world? Ezekiel 5 and verse 1 talks about, well, in that passage, Israel's destruction. The descendants of Israel, that would be our peoples. Their destruction over there in that passage is divided into thirds. You have the first third of it that's burned with fire. And then the second third, it's talking about a nuclear attack. And then the last third, that's referring to captivity or slavery. In Ezekiel 5:12, it speaks of the pestilence. A third part of you shall die with the pestilence, it says. A third! And that's just talking about destruction. A pestilence, as my father explains in his booklet, that can be brought on by a plague of violence or burning. Or rioting. Or racial strife and division. In his booklet, my father says this: the seeds of this future calamity have already been sown. The government has lost control. There's a breakdown of law and order. When the riots in Baltimore were at their peak, the mayor instructed the police to stand down and give protesters space to destroy. There's virtually no show of government force. In the future, when this violence spreads, will this be our main hope for peace? To just give it space, in other words? And he goes on to say how close we're getting, dangerously close, to social anarchy and chaos. Yesterday we talked about this lame duck presidency and the 70 days or so that we have before the inauguration. It's 70 days that we want to keep a close watch on, because from the first day of it, it doesn't look like this transition is going to be very smooth. That's one thing the United States has often prided itself in, that, well, we always have a smooth transition of power. Who knows what will happen, you know, for sure. But when you look at what's ramping up on both sides, people are angry. There are people in Trump's camp that are very angry. And certainly there are things that he's said or done that have caused problems. It comes from both sides. Behind it all is human nature. Behind it all is the broadcaster, that great broadcaster, the prince of the power of the air, Ephesians 2, verse 2, who's just bombarding the air with all kinds of thoughts and impulses of vanity and lust and greed and division and hatred. That's where it all comes from. That's where the source is. It goes right to the devil who's been cast down to this earth. The God of this world, confined to this earth. And look at the earth. Look at the United States. In Isaiah 1, in verse 5, it talks about the whole head being sick, the whole heart being faint, all of the strength, all of the stability of the nation gone because of the sickness, because of the disease. My father, again, in the Ezekiel booklet, he says, we no longer have control of our cities. We're losing control. And then you have all these guns, and then you have all this hatred, and then you have all this division. And as I said yesterday, we've seen previews of it already in cities like Baltimore and St. Louis and other places. And now the protesters come out in full force. And, well, it's for a different reason. It's not a police shooting this time. But what if there is a police shooting? What if there's another one? And what if, knowing that Trump is coming in with the support of 59 million bigots, you think this is going to help tamp it down, the violence, the hatred, the protesting? Boy, these are scary developments. Thankfully, we know what God's perspective is. God tells us. That's why we've got to sound the alarm. He tells us what's coming. From the sole of the foot, even to the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. That's what Isaiah says. All of these sores, these wounds, this sickness. Your country's desolate. Your cities, it says, are burned with fire. You put Isaiah 1 together with Ezekiel 5. Sickness through and through. Isaiah continues in that first chapter saying that, he says we're like Sodom and Gomorrah down in verses 9 and 10. It's our sins, in other words. It's our sins. You don't hear much about that, however, when you have these exchanges on CNN or elsewhere. You don't hear much about it during the protests. Every once in a while, like Joel Hilliker pointed out in his piece today, every once in a while you have one commentator that kind of stumbles onto this. But it's amazing to me that there aren't more. He quoted from Peggy Noonan, her piece at the Wall Street Journal. She says, God is in charge of history. Well, good for her in at least bringing God into the equation. He asks us to work, to try, to pour ourselves out, to make things better. But he is an actor in history also. He chastises and rescues. He intervenes in ways seen and unseen. Well, that's not a message you hear often. Certainly not in the major media. Noonan says he's trying to get our attention. I would agree with that. He's trying to get our attention. We have candidates we can't be proud of. We must choose among the embarrassments. What might we be doing as a nation and a people that would have earned this moment? Well, that's a good question. Is there something we're doing wrong? These leaders, as my father has said before, I mean, they're just a reflection of our society. They sure are. And we see it pretty well evenly divided. And a kingdom divided can't stand. But what are we doing? Why isn't it working? Why are we seeing things break down? And even with all of the optimistic talk coming from now the new administration that's coming on board, well, we're going to build up all the infrastructure. Everybody's going to have a job from now on. The bridges, the airports, the roads, everything else. Who's going to pay for this? How's it going to get done when we're just besieged with problems? problems that, as you can see in looking around, problems that are worsening by the day. God indeed has been trying to get our attention. There was another commentator, I think it might be in one of my emails I'll get to later, who said another one, Bob Schieffer, I think it was, talking about, I think it was somewhat jokingly, but talking about the curses that are setting in. So you have an occasional voice, as I say, an occasional voice, but on the whole, there's no room for God in the discussion. Generally speaking, there's no room for God in the discussion. There's plenty of room for racism, bigotry, hatred. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who has the solution? Who doesn't? But certainly not enough room in that discussion to discuss God or to consider what we as a nation and a people might be doing wrong. God is trying to get our attention, and we're ignoring him. We're shaking our fist at him defiantly. We're blaspheming him. We're caught up into idolatry, into witchcraft. Radical individualism. It's all about the self. What's in it for me? God says, look, you're suffering. You're suffering because of curses. That's what Isaiah 1 is saying. Soon God's going to get our attention, because these problems are going to intensify. And God, because he's so merciful, he's so loving, and he's so patient, he'd prefer that we wake up by just hearing the message and responding to the message. But we won't do that. It'd be good to spend some time with the United States and Britain in prophecy. Joel Hilliker references that at the end of his piece. And as it happens, when the election was playing out, what was it? I guess early Wednesday morning. I just haven't had the time yet to go through it and review it, but I was going through my copy of the U.S. and Britain, particularly those last few chapters, and just noting the places that I had highlighted or underlined or the comments that I had written out into the margin next to Mr. Armstrong's text, that inspired text. That would be good text to review. God's trying to get our attention. That warning has been going out for decades. The future of America, the future of Great Britain, it's all laid out there in the United States and Britain in prophecy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us, even ahead of the mandatory Friday assignment. You can email today. You can email just in a few minutes, right at the end of this program. Send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Yesterday we talked about things we need to be watching for following the election result from the other night. We spent more time on that in the first segment with what's happening in the United States itself. But there's also a reaction abroad. And that's definitely something to keep our eyes on as well. Some of this is a bit of a rehash because we were following it even as Donald Trump made these statements about NATO and the future of Europe and the oncoming European army. But at the Telegraph here in the UK this morning, it says here, here's a game. Guess how many types of battle tank are employed in the defense forces of Europe? As a clue, I'll tell you that the U.S. uses two. No, still not sure? The answer is that the nations of Europe, equivalent in size to the entire United States, maintain 37 sorts of tank. What does this have to do with the election of Donald Trump? Actually, everything. Europe, with its meager hodgepodge of forces, has relied on the U.S. for its defense since the Second World War. Mr. Trump has been elected on a promise to end this free riding. So with geopolitical threats on the rise, Europe now needs to start taking its own defense seriously. And this provides a golden opportunity for Britain. Well, he doesn't have it right on that point. Britain's on the way out. And yet here is one that's really urging Britain and the rest of Europe to build up its defense. And that's coming. That is coming. It's not going to be spearheaded, though, by Britain. But he is right to point out that, as far as Trump is concerned, the free riding is coming to an end. And so what does this mean for Europe? What does this mean for the European Union? In a world that, as he brings out here, well, there's just hot spots all over the place. And so Europe's going to have to take on more itself, given all of these geopolitical threats. Russia on the eastern wing, as it points out later in the piece, and all of these areas in the Middle East in chaos. The jihadists that are coming into Europe, China on the march in the South China Sea, and yet amid all of this, the EU defense spending has been falling until last year. It's already starting to head in the other direction, but it's always been low because, well, Uncle Sam's always been there. The United States has always been there to make sure of Europe's security. The Telegraph says we don't yet know what direction a Trump foreign policy will take. He is by turns isolationist and hawkish. He promises to smash ISIS, yet also to avoid far-off wars in foreign lands. He's cast doubt on NATO and the Iran deal, suggested that South Korea and Japan develop their own nuclear weapons, and spoken admiringly of Vladimir Putin and Russia's army of hackers. The man tipped to be Mr. Trump's Secretary of State, Newt Gingrich, once referred to Estonia as a suburb of St. Petersburg. To call Mr. Trump's foreign policy unpredictable is an understatement. I mean, there's just so much that we don't know. But one thing that he's made clear is, look, we can't go on. The United States can't go on paying for all this. The United States can't go on supplying all the arms. It says here, finally, what we do know is that Europe is woefully ill-equipped to serve its own strategic needs. The only two countries in the EU that fulfill all their NATO defense spending obligations are the UK and Poland. The U.S. footed the bill for more than 70% of NATO's defense spending last year. 70%! You think this is going to continue? Not under Donald Trump. Not if he follows through. Which, on this, I think it's safe to say that he will follow through on this promise. Because it does align perfectly with a number of prophecies regarding the resurrection, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Well, you can expect it. It's something to watch. The future of NATO's in doubt. And so Europe needs to step up and defend itself in the view of this piece at the Telegraph. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll get to some of the emails that you've been sending in over the last couple of days. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
On Monday's show, before the big news of the election started to fill the news cycle Tuesday and Wednesday, we followed up on that program from last Friday, why young people go bad, and we got into that further on Monday, and the response that we've gotten to those two programs, they're continuing to come in. This one here from Buffalo, New York. I've been listening to the program since the beginning and have missed very few of them. They're all so awesome that I crave this truth. I really appreciate all the programs directed at teaching our children to become princes and giving them the vision of their place in God's family. Monday's show was so amazing to me personally because I felt God spoke to me through that broadcast. I'm a newly baptized member and have a 2-year-old son who attends with me. My husband is supportive but not called. Thankfully, my mom is also newly baptized, and she's a big help to me and my son. But I tend to feel insecure about how I'm doing in my child-rearing department because I wasn't raised in the church. My son does have pretty good behavior that people in the world notice, but sometimes I feel I might be letting him down because I'm not familiar with godly child-rearing. Your program inspired me because there are other parents out there in the same position as me, and we all share the same goal of giving our children a godly upbringing, no matter our life situation. Instead of feeling at a loss for not being raised in God's church, it just gave me more drive to become more diligent in my teaching and giving of love to my son. I truly thank you for sharing these emails with us all because they are gifts from God too. That's someone writing in from Buffalo, New York. Great response there. This one here from London, just down the road from us, 80 miles. It says, I'm a regular listener from the beginning of your radio show, and finally decided to write after being inspired so many times, and I don't know where to start. I'm overwhelmed by many thoughts and of the role that we have in our daily life to put in practice what we receive daily. I'd like to share all of them with you, but for the sake of space and time, I mainly would like to just say thank you so much for all those programs. All these programs on the radio, including all the others on the air too, God's Word shared on the radio daily. What a blessing it is to become one mind. And not only that, Not only that, but in each one, there's a completed message of inspiration, of correction, of instructions, of encouragement, and more. Thank you many times over to your team in sharing God's truth. And may we all learn in practice the same mindset of Christ that comes from the heart of London. This one here from the United States. It says, once again, great show. My husband and I listen to the show early in the morning while he's getting ready for work. We both love and value the show. It's been a great supplement to our regular Bible study. We both value Mystery of the Ages. This, again, is in response to those two shows, Friday and Monday. It says, I've read Mystery several times, and I'm reading it now as part of my Bible study. And he goes on to say how much he appreciated that email I read Monday. About the young father who is teaching his children from out of that book and learning so many new things himself as he goes. Well, quite a few have come in the last day and a half or so in response to the election and some of the things we've been discussing on the last couple of programs. This one from Abu Dhabi is the individual who mentioned that example about Bob Schieffer, wondering if we're under some kind of a curse. What can we expect next? Schieffer said. Will it rain frogs? That's from one commentator. You don't hear too many like that, as I said in the first segment. But this listener says here, sadly, he has no idea how right he is. But thankfully, that's where we who support God's end-time warning message come in. Thank you. Thank you to all of those who work so tirelessly at the Trumpet Daily. Another one, this came in just a few hours before yesterday's show, a listener who said, quite simply, can't wait to hear the Trumpet Daily today. Anxious to hear what we had to say on the Trumpet Daily after such a huge news day. Another one here, from a fellow who says, Barack Obama knows he has but a short time left to fundamentally transform America, and his agenda has never included the relinquishment and peaceful transfer of power to an opposing successor. Given that Donald Trump has been elected president of the United States, and given the reality that this nation is being cursed by God for its great iniquity, what sort of tumultuous transition might we expect in the next 70 days? That comment comes from one of you, and I alluded to that, actually, that point there at the end, earlier in the show. This one here from Barbados, when we listened to Mr. Trump's speech after winning the election, he thanked all the people who helped him and his wife, who helped him, and as my wife pointed out, he even thanked his dead parents and brother, but what stood out so blatantly and so frighteningly is that he didn't even thank God. This godlessness from our leaders and the people is why the nations of Israel are so cursed, and God will have to send them into captivity. It's sad to see that so many Americans truly believe that Mr. Trump will make America great again. This world needs the message coming from the PCG. They need Mystery of the Ages. They need the United States and Britain in prophecy. They need the gospel message. May God allow his message to reach the widest audience possible. Another one here from a lady who says, thanks for the program today. I'm grateful to God for allowing the election to go this way. I really believe that the people who did not buy in to the mainstream bullying nonsense, and there are a lot of them, they need to be allowed to see for themselves that the solution is not in man. I mean, it is interesting that you had one far to the left, and they really thought he was the savior, and now you have another one over on the right, a populist. There's a populist uprising, and so many people on his side believe now that he's the savior. Pretty amazing. And what is God trying to show us? I don't have time to read all of this this email, but she brings out some good points. This one here from New Zealand, It says, it was interesting to hear the clips that you played in today's program about Donald Trump's victory. The left was so assured that Hillary Clinton would win in a landslide. It brought to mind the verse in Proverbs, pride goes before the destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Surely the fact that they were so certain and confident of victory has made the loss so much more difficult for them. She says here, keep up the great job and the energy level that inspires and motivates all of us who listen. And then finally, one here from someone just down the road, right here in the Midlands. It says, just walking into my workplace yesterday, I was fascinated to hear all the anti-Trump rhetoric, mostly women wailing about how we're more closer to doomsday. For them, Trump's a bully, a bigot, a racist, or worse, a climate change denier who should be taken out for his support of the gun lobby. Apparently, he will undo all the good works of Mr. Obama. You just wonder why people think this way, even here in the UK. Thank God for his inspired truth that we hear so much on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and other programs, and for the books that you promote, like Mystery of the Ages. That, as I say, comes from one of our listeners just down the road here in the Midlands. Well, if you'd like to write the program, don't forget to send in those comments to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury as we put the finishing touches on yet another Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.